Pam Larry is trying to stop the flood of genetically modified organisms washing over the land by forcing labeling of GMO foods. This leads us to ask, should we or should we not be allowed to know about the modified genes in our food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 757th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Frankfurt who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer, our very own Miss Idaho, Nikki James, on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, by virtue of its doctrine of substantial equivalence, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has allowed Monsanto, DuPont, and other crop science companies to unleash a flood of genetically modified food crops across the land. As a consequence, many, if not most, of the processed foods on grocers' shelves now contain modified genes, which is to say, genes from one species of life that have been combined with the genes from another species of life to form what must be a third species of life. The cross-species hybrid forms of life that are now contained in our foods and that have come to be known as GMOs lead us to some very interesting questions. To what extent do GMOs now inhabit our food chain? Are they in your baby's food? Haha. Are GMOs foods safe to eat? And finally, should we? This is really the question of the day. Put your thinking hats on here. Should we or should we not be allowed to know about the GMOs in our food? Here to help us find some answers, we have Pam Larry. Pam Larry is the instigator and founder for LabelGMOs.org. Pam, welcome aboard. Are you there?
I am here.
Good for you. Now, tell us a little bit about Label GMOs.
Sure. Label GMOs was started about a year ago behind the scenes and then came out on March 10th. I had the strong desire to get genetically engineered foods labeled, and so I'd never done anything like this before. So I took some time to get things organized and on board and did a website and came out, I call it, on March 10th. And since then, I've been pretty much traveling around the state getting leaders on board in their communities to organize their communities for this initiative. And now we have over 115 leaders throughout the state of California.
So this is Pam, this is a statewide California initiative then. Is there anything like this going on in the rest of the country?
Well, when I first started, there were some different states that contacted me about initiatives, and then once they realized how much work it was, haven't heard much from them since. But there are a couple legislative efforts that seem to be rumbling right now, one in Vermont and one in Washington, and then there are others that are ongoing, but those are some new ones.
So this is a significant thing here in California, and if California were to pass such a law, you know, probably the rest of the country would be forced to go along as well. Pam, we always ask our guests the big question, which is, who pays the way for...
Who pays the way for LabelGMOs.org?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are now part of a larger organization, a coalition that's come together. LabelGMOs itself gets funded by donations from people at the grassroots level, and that's pretty much it. We've had like a couple of businesses that have donated to us, one a co-op down in Santa Monica, but it's grown. It's grown far beyond me and this group of leaders that's organized throughout the state. In June, Dr. Bronner's Magical Soap came on board and decided in the Center for Food Safety and the Organic Consumer Association and Food Democracy Now and Institute for Responsible Technology. So, and then a bunch of businesses have started to get involved. Nature's Path has been supportive.
So you're drawing together quite a coalition of people and businesses and groups then.
Well, the coalition is. Label GMOs is a part of that coalition.
Okay.
So we started it. The coalition website is the California Right to Know. It's carighttoknow.org.
Good. Fair enough.
Yeah, we've grown. Yeah.
Also with us today, we have Thomas Whitman, who's the host of the Genetic Engineering blog. Thomas, welcome to the food chain. Welcome back.
Good morning, Michael, and good morning, Pam.
Just a sec. Let me.
Hi.
There you go. Guest one, guest two. So give me a hello on the microphone again.
Hello there, Michael.
Well, there's something wrong with the microphone here, and what it is probably me. Oh, there you go. Got it.
There, I see the red light now. Good morning, Michael, and good morning, Pam.
Good morning.
Thomas, what is the Genetic Engineering blog?
Well, the Genetic Engineering blog is a news email list that I started about 15 years ago when I first became concerned with GMOs. And the idea I had was to filter the information because there was so much information about this, and there still is, that people are overwhelmed and don't know what to believe. And so certain people, like the directors of nonprofit organizations that are interested in food safety, needed a really filtered stream of information. And so over the years, it's grown, and it's supported by Newman's Own Organics Foundation.
Good.
And it's just really been, to me, a real work of passion and a way to keep people informed about what's going on behind their backs.
Fair enough. Also not with us today is a representative from the Monsanto Corporation that declined to participate for some reason or another. I called them up and asked them to participate. And as we go through the program, you'll probably see why I asked them instead of other crop science companies. But they instead pointed me to a public relations firm in Washington, D.C., and I thought, what the heck? I gave them a call, but haven't made that connection yet. So we are without participation from Monsanto or anybody from those who are in favor, I guess, of not labeling GMOs. And today we especially would like to put out a request for anybody out there who does not think that we should be allowed to know about the GMOs in our food. We'd really like to hear from you today. The phone numbers are 831-479-1080 or 800-624-2665. If you don't think we should be allowed to know about the GMOs in our food, please call. Oh, there we go. So what the heck are GMOs? I have a friend who went to Thailand, and she said she went to a food show over there, and there was a gentleman who offered her a slice of tomato. He said, "Do you like tomatoes, ma'am?" And she said, "Well, I love tomato sandwiches." And she said, and he said, "How would you like a tomato that does not bleed its water or leak its water?" And she said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Well, you know, when you make a tomato sandwich with a ripe tomato, how it makes the bread all soggy?" And she said, "Yes, but that's when the tomatoes are good." And he said, "How would you like to have a ripe tomato that does not leak water?" And she said, "Well, I'll try that." And she did. It was good. "But how on earth do you make a ripe tomato that does not leak its water?" "Well, of course, you take the gene from some kind of species out there in the world that prevents water from leaking, and you graft it into the tomato, and there you have a tomato that doesn't leak water." So that's kind of what genetically modified organisms are all about. Fair enough description, Pam?
No, actually, it's not.
Okay, good.
Okay.
It was kind of amusing, though. You got to admit that.
Yeah. I mean, and this is what causes a lot of people confusion because I think part of it is that the opposition to folks, you know, the folks that don't want labeling, have been promulgating this for a long time. Oh, we've
well, wait a minute, Pam. Pam? Who doesn't want us to not have labeling?
Some people in the biotechnology industry and some people who have an opinion that there is absolutely no difference between the kind of hybridization or genetic or what would I call it?
Conventional hybridization, which we've been doing for millennia, right?
Yeah. And what do they call it? Gene escaping me right now, but it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with a process that is new, that is cannot happen in nature. It's about cross species or certain kinds of interspecies hybridization techniques that include specific laboratory processes such as fusion of cells or in vitro nucleic acid techniques. You know,
all of those things.
Recombinant DNA and RNA. Yeah.
So maybe what they did is they took the genes from the tomato and spliced them together with the genes from a slime eel and made a tomato that wouldn't leak.
Exactly. And I actually talked to the woman that was on the team that developed the Flavor Saver tomato.
There you go. Can you hold that, Pam? We have to take a quick break.
Sure.
This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. Should we be allowed to know about the genetically modified foods in our food? With Pam Larry, Thomas Whitman, and you, right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. What do you think out there? Do you think we should be allowed to know about the genetically modified foods in our genetically modified organisms in our food? Well, I think Pam Larry thinks so, and she went about instigating a petition effort here in California to force manufacturers of foods to list all of the GMOs that are contained in the food. And Thomas Whitman, I think, probably would agree with her. Right, Thomas?
Of course.
There
we have a right to know what we're eating. I mean, when you look at a food label, don't you want to know how much sugar is in it and how much carbohydrates and what effect it'll have on your body? I mean, what if there's something in there that you don't even know what it'll do to your body?
And there you are. And that's the discussion today. What do you think out there? Do you think that we should be allowed to know about the genetically modified foods or organisms in our foods? What if they splice the genes of a slime eel together with the genes of a tomato and make a tomato that doesn't leak water? Would you like to know about that gene in there? Or would you just be happy eating away in blissful ignorance?
Or what if you had a food allergy? Wouldn't you want to know if there was something from a peanut in there? Or if you're a vegetarian, if there was something from a fish in there?
And there you go. So, Pam Larry, to what extent have the genetically modified organisms have come to inhabit our food chain? To what extent do we find them in our foods?
First of all, I'd like to say that I remembered that term that I was forgetting in my grandmother brain. It's called selective breeding.
Right. So, which is what we've been doing forever.
Yeah. The grandmother brain goes blank sometimes. It's pretty pervasive, actually, in processed foods, mostly because a lot of processed foods contain corn, canola, and soy and their byproducts. So that's the primary place that we have to look for this stuff is in the byproducts. Canola oil, corn derivatives, soy protein, soy oil, that kind of stuff. Some people estimate as much as 80% of all the processed foods contain one or another or all of the above.
Thomas, to what extent has the GMOs infested and become inhabited in these, like soybeans and corn? And I mean, we have soybeans that have been genetically engineered. You can dump a bucket of herbicide on them and it won't kill the plant. So they have these genes now that are resistant to herbicides. To what extent have those genes become infused into the American soybean crop?
Into the crop itself?
Yeah.
I think we're talking upwards of 90% in the soybean crop. Other crops like corn, we're talking a similar level, and canola, the oil, all of Canada doesn't produce anything that's non-GMO anymore because of rampant contamination. Mm-hmm. And in fact, now they're growing GMO canola in Virginia and on the old tobacco plantations because there's no way for them to get contaminated. It's really hard to grow a non-GMO crop that's open pollinated like canola.
Because once it's out there, it gets pollinated. There you go. And so it's how do you find food that's not GMO? Pam?
So right now, if it's USDA certified organic, you have a much better chance of it not being genetically engineered, primarily because they are not to be using any seeds that are GMO. But the best way to find out if your food's genetically, or to make sure that you aren't buying it if you don't want to, is to get food that is non-GMO project certified or verified. There is a little emblem on the front of it that you can see if you go to stores and many natural health food stores.
So are you saying that not only that the labeling organic does not ensure that you're going to get non-GMO foods?
No, it does not, because of the contamination problems. You've got a much better likelihood, but the corn and the canola are contaminated. The soy is contaminated, but not as much because it's a self-pollinator, from what I understand. And so it's not as high of a crossbreeder as the corn and the canola. But, you know, many people I know don't eat corn at all anymore just because.
Wow. So in essence, we have to kind of look with a microscope to find foods that haven't been contaminated. So we look to the organic label. We look to labels that say I'm certified non-GMOs, but essentially the GMO foods are here, there, and everywhere. So if you want to eat foods that are not, just beware, and good luck to you. So are GMOs foods safe to eat? Well, how do we know they're safe to eat, Pam?
I'd like to just comment just a second on the last one. I mean, I think
sure.
It's very important to remember that the only foods we have to worry about in this country right now are the corn, the cotton, the canola seed, the soil, the sugar beet.
And alfalfa?
Soil, the sugar beet, alfalfa, zucchini, and crookneck squash, about 17%, and then papaya. But that leaves a huge amount of food that is not yet contaminated or on our market. So mm-hmm. I just want to, not have people think that, all...
That's fair enough. Why aren't the rest of the crops re-engineered in this way?
Well, they may be re-engineered this way, but they are not on our market for sale or growth or sale because they have to go through a process to be deregulated right now through the U.S., most of them anyway, if mm-hmm. they're done through the process that includes bacteria and viruses, then they need to be deregulated through the USDA APHIS program.
Okay. Has USDA refused any crop certification? I mean, they just approved alfalfa. Alfalfa, as I understand, is an open pollinator. It's kind of like the bottom of the food chain. All of the animals eat it, so, there it is. Has USDA... Go ahead.
They've held off on quite a few crops. The salmon, actually that one's through the FDA, but genetically engineered salmon is in line to be deregulated, and so far that's been held at bay. Wheat is another one that is genetically engineered, but the farmers in this country have not wanted to plant it because they're concerned, because 50 countries in the world label their genetically engineered foods, and they're afraid of losing their market in the EU. So we don't really, although it's been very hybridized in this country, and so many people feel like it's creating many allergies, it has not yet been genetically engineered on the market here in the United States.
Okay, fair enough. Well, what about the question, is it safe? How do we know it's safe? It must be safe. It's everywhere.
Well, there haven't been a whole lot of, there have been no human studies out there. One of the problems is that because the seeds are patented, scientists must get proprietary permission to use them to do research. There is quite a bit of research on animals by the industry itself in the short term, and many scientists criticize that data as being incomplete, not enough time. You know, it's controversial, in other words, what I'm trying to say out there. For myself, as a grandma and a mother, and one of the reasons that I feel like this is important is I want and will trust independent research where the outcome of the research is not dependent on, you know, is not about fiscal, you know, is not, you know, it's not being run by somebody who's going to be getting money from this in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust the data that's out there as a grandmother. Yeah.
Thomas?
So there have been some studies, though, that show problems with animals.
Dr. Don Huber, who's the professor emeritus of plant pathology at Purdue University, identified a new microscopic pathogen spawned by in Roundup-drenched soils that is causing spontaneous abortion rates of 25 to 45% in the animal populations eating Roundup-ready GMO crops. And so, holy smokes, how did this... Here we have a grandfatherly little old professor type from Purdue who's saying, look at this. There's something wrong here. What is it? But the industry is saying, well, no, there's nothing wrong here. And we know there's nothing wrong because of the doctrine of substantial equivalence. Now, what the heck does substantial equivalence mean? Well, it's what the whole pyramid is based on. And we're going to talk about substantial equivalence and why we should know or should not know what's about the genetic modified organisms in our food. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Pam Larry, Thomas Whitman, and you. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the federal government says that genetically modified foods are safe through its doctrine of substantial equivalence. But what the heck does substantial equivalence mean? Pam Larry, can you help us out there?
Sure. Andy Kimbrell calls it making a decision based on 14th century technology, which is that if it looks the same, smells the same, sometimes tastes the same, then it must be the same thing. So that's the doctrine of substantial equivalence. Is basically they're saying that because, you know, that all those things, but we're asking for 21st century technology, you know, in consideration, and say that it is not the same.
How did the government come to accept the doctrine of substantial equivalence as being proof that genetically engineered foods are safe to eat?
Did you want Thomas to answer that?
Either one of you. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I've been talking a lot, yeah.
Well, that's okay. You're very knowledgeable, Pam. But how the government ever accepted a doctrine like substantial equivalence is beyond me. There really isn't.
Well, then let me jump in here, by
good,
golly. And this
Michael.
Is really why I wanted to invite Monsanto Corporation to join us today, because in 1991, Monsanto employee Michael Taylor became an employee at the Food and Drug Administration, and through his efforts, the FDA accepted the doctrine of substantial equivalence as its standard bearer for whether GMOs were safe or not. Now, all that means is that if Pam said, if something looks like a tomato or if something looks like a duck, walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And in 1991, who among us knew enough about genetic engineering to think otherwise? And so this doctrine of substantial equivalence was accepted as the ruling force of genetically modified foods. Then Michael Taylor went back to the Monsanto Corporation, became vice president of Monsanto. Then Michael Taylor went back to the federal government, and he was just hired by the Obama administration to be the food safety czar for the United States of America. So what it appears to me is that this whole doctrine of substantial equivalence is that the government is saying genetically engineered foods are safe because Monsanto says they're safe. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, actually. And not only that, but the EPA has recently gotten a new policy that the biotech companies can do their own environmental impact statements. I mean, Michael Thomas is not the only revolving door, employee of the biotech industry within the USDA and the FDA. There are many of them.
So they're coming back and forth. So,
yes.
So we have our choice here, right, Thomas? We can believe the biotech companies that have millions and billions and trillions and maybe even zillions at risk on their genetically modified crops. Or we can believe this kindly old Dr. Huber, retired professor from Purdue, who's saying something's not right here. And so who do we believe?
Well, that is one of the problems with our government, is that the officials in the government that are in the regulatory agencies are, in fact, from the corporations that develop things that like genetically engineered foods. That's the revolving door syndrome. But there's more than just Dr. Hubert. I mean, there's been so many other cases. One that I always think of is in the Amazon areas. There are so many genetically engineered soybeans there, and they overspray not just the beans, but small villages and people. And the amount of damage to people is well documented. There's no doubt at all. And when I say spray,
well, wait a minute. Is that the danger from the pesticide spray, or is it not danger from the genetically modified foods though?
Well, right. In this case, in the Amazon, it's because of the Roundup spraying that goes on over the
crop. I'm talking about the organisms themselves that have become infused in the food.
Well, there have been many, many studies that have shown problems in the guts of animals, and most of those studies have been suppressed or refuted by other scientists.
Right. I would like to
jump in.
Go right ahead, Pam.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in here. I don't remember the year, but Arpad Pushtai over in the UK was a very respected biologist, and he did a study with rats that showed that with Bacillus thuringiensis potatoes, and so he was able to do this because he himself could do the genetic engineering, because that was his job. And so he, like I said, well-renowned, well-known, well-respected, well-funded, went in, did three different groups, just plain potatoes that had been smeared with the organism Bacillus thuringiensis, which is an insecticide.
Right.
And then the genetically engineered potato with the Bacillus thuringiensis trait for killing insecticides engineered into the potato. The only group that had problems was the one that had been genetically engineered. So, again, it is not, and he was silenced. He was ostracized, and it was when he had his gag order taken off that the UK very quickly and the rest of the EU went to labeling. So it's not necessarily the organism itself. That study showed that it was the process, okay, not necessarily the organism. So
then the question becomes, who do we trust? And I don't know who to trust. and so when you don't trust somebody, you have to go on your own instincts here, I guess, and trust yourself. But to do that, you have to have information. And thus we get to the crux of our program today. Should we or should we not have the right to know what's in our food? And should we know if our food contains organisms that have been genetically engineered by taking the genes from one species and the genes from another species and combining them to make something entirely new. Not entirely new, the government might say, but certainly new, because they do things that the original species could never have done through selective breeding. So that's the question today, and you're invited to call in with your notion. Well, I'm really curious to hear anybody out there who does not think we should have the right to know this. So Dan, or I guess I just lost a caller there, right? Boop. Just like that. Well, let's ask our guest, Thomas.
Well, I think we do need the right to know. And if you think about the fact that these, like you just said, Michael, are new species, they're completely novel and have never been on the earth before. I mean, the biggest myth about genetic engineering is that we've been doing it, like Pam said, for centuries and centuries. And we have been selective breeding. But you can only selective breed between species that will actually breed together. So when you have species like, strawberries and fish, one of the earliest genetic engineered projects, there's no way that they would ever...
They put the genes from a strawberry into a fish, or put the genes from a fish into the genes of a strawberry?
They put the genes from a fish into a strawberry so it would be more tolerant to frost. And it wasn't a great product. But nevertheless, those two species would never...
They would never mate. Well, what do you think, folks? Give us a call, 800-624-2665, 831-479, 1080. Right back with Pam Larry and Thomas Whitman and you. Well, folks, do you think you should have the right to know what's in your food? And especially genetically modified organisms that have genes from one species, the genes from a cat, put together with the genes from a rat and used to make a brand new packaged food of some kind. I don't know. But that's the concept. You take genes from one species, genes from another species, genes from a fish, and infuse it with genes from a strawberry, and on and on and on. Think of the combinations. I guess they're just pretty much endless. But do you think that you should have the right to know that if somebody has taken your tomato and blended it with a slime eel, that you should know that this has happened? Or should it just be something you shouldn't know? What do you think? We're at 831-479-1080, 800-624-2665. Pam, what do you think? Obviously, you're the instigator here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well... one of the things I wanted to say is one of the women who, started to say at one point, who developed that tomato, she thinks that these foods should be labeled. She would be an interesting one for you to have on your show. But anyway,
Belinda Martineau. Was that the flavor saver you're talking
about?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Belinda Martineau. She feels, I was on a panel with her, and she's very pro-labeling, as are many people who are scientists within the genetic engineering industry, I might add. I believe... We don't know enough yet. I remember 30 years ago, my bacteriology scientist professor saying, a scientific fact is one that lasts more than 3 years. We don't know enough yet. Yeah, we don't know enough yet for me to feel comfortable. There are too many things going on in this country. People are unhealthy. They're unhappy. There's so much that could be gone into. Many drugs are being taken to combat a lot of stuff. We're slugs. And I just have to point to, you know, the fact that we don't know what's going on. And so rather than have to prove them unsafe, you know, rather than, you know, we should be doing the precautionary principle, which is unless they are, which is what the EU uses, unless they are completely safe, I don't want to be part of a long-term experiment without my permission.
That's exactly right, Pam. And furthermore, this experiment is not one like, for example, DDT, where you can take it off the market. This is an experiment that cannot be erased. It's the environment forever.
Once it's out there, it's out there. Terry, what do you think?
Well, I've been listening to this, and you know, on the extreme, when you talk about crossing a fish with a strawberry or something, I think that's, you know, pretty out there, and that's the obvious thing. The problem I have is, where do you draw the line? Now, one of the comments was that things through hybridization of the same one, or let's just say, for instance, corn, you know, like corn here. I've heard that they found the Incas and the Aztecs or Mayans or whatever, they found little itty bitty ears of corn that were like 2 or 3 inches long. And that was what corn was thousands of years ago. And somehow it's gotten to the point where it is today. And then we talk about Indian corn that has all the colors in it. I don't know whether that's natural or not. But a lot of these things, selective breeding, has changed them so much from the way they originated in nature. You can't go into a grocery store. I'm talking about just an average grocery store, not some, quote, health-type grocery store. But just going to a normal grocery store in the produce department, I'll venture to say that not one item of produce is natural in the way it was originally found by humans. And not that they've been genetically engineered in the scientific sense, but they've all been engineered for selective breeding to make them bigger and healthier, not necessarily healthier, but more colorful, more flavorful, more attractive, whatever. And so at some point, where do you draw the line? If you just, you know, in other words, I'm just saying, if you went out there and just drew a line right now arbitrarily and said, well, anything that's different than what we have today, you need to label it. Well, today is so far beyond what it was originally that...
Well, I have a good line you can draw, sir, and that is that if that corn now has a bacteria or a pesticide genetically engineered into it, is that different enough that you'd want to have a label on it?
That's a good question.
Well, I would want to know.
Well, okay.
So, and with all due respects, a corn that has been bred selectively from one variety of corn to the other variety of corn would never end up with a Bacillus thuringiensis gene in it.
Well, we don't know that. We don't really know that. In nature, things have a way of doing things. For instance,
so the fish would mate with a strawberry?
No, it wouldn't do it that way. I'm not talking about that particular situation, but there may be let's say animals, we'll say slugs and snails, that kind of thing, that their travel through the fields where something is growing, I'm talking about a natural thing.
Right.
So, you know, this can be the extreme. But that may enter the cell structure of that strawberry, so when the next time it produces seeds, it may develop a type of strawberry that is frost tolerant, let's say. And I see this in livestock. You'll find types of horses. The horses are very susceptible to flies, for instance.
Right.
Flies are very attracted to horses. But there are other types of equine, let's say, that flies don't bother them at all. They're not interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
And in nature, these things can reproduce and develop a strain of horses that don't get flies. And this is done in nature. This is not something that man has done in a laboratory.
Great, great point. Okay, there's the line. Where do you draw the line, Pam Leary?
I draw it when it has to happen in the laboratory, or else it can't happen at all. that's what this initiative is about. You know, I mean, if it can happen in nature, it can happen in nature. But, you know, if it has to be done in the laboratory, then that's where I draw the line.
Okay, and we're going to have to take a quick break, and when we come back, yes, we're going to talk about the initiative. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, should we or should we not know about the genetically modified organisms contained in our food? The argument has been made that, by golly, in nature, everything goes through this evolutionary process where things change them. But only one change in zillions seems to work and take hold, but the rest of them fall by the wayside. Is that what we're doing here in genetic engineering? We're eliminating all those odds. We're kind of making experiments by ourselves. We're combining the genes of a fish with that of a strawberry, and so on. And if that's the case, should we have the right to know that these experiments or these developments are taking place in our food? That's the question today. Pam Leary, as a mother and a grandmother, one day you came to the realization that you're going to make a change here. And so you started a process by where you're trying to set up an initiative here in California, at least, to force the labeling of GMO foods. So why did you make that decision?
Because I feel that our right to know should be more important than the corporate right to a non-transparent profit, and I wanted to make sure that my family and those I love had a choice to be involved in a long-term experiment or not. That's why.
Do you see this as an experiment?
I do. And, you know, for those who feel comfortable eating them, labeling does nothing. You know, they're in fact, it's good because then they get to have the advertisement that they're getting to eat what they want to eat. So I don't understand, you know, I would think that if they're so wonderful, biotechnology would want folks to know about it. But in fact, you know, they're afraid because they think people don't want to eat them because there's this inherent, you know, reaction to something like that. At any rate, I would really love to invite people to join us if they feel strongly about this, and many people do, and we need folks to help us gather signatures soon.
How do people join you, Pam?
By go to labelgmos.org and sign up to volunteer. We're aiming, we've got about 1,500 folks to help us gather signatures. I'd like to see at least 3,000. I'm going to be at the EcoFarm conference, and Thomas can tell you more about that. To give a signature gathering training, there is a great active group in Santa Cruz and pretty much in most communities around the state of California. So we invite people to join us and get involved. LabelGMOs.org, and you can also go to California Right to Know, that's carighttoknow.org for the coalition website.
Okay, and EcoFarm Conference is February 1 to 4. And Pam's going to be there on Saturday. We have day passes still left. It's in Pacific Grove, California, just below Monterey. And as Pam said, she is going to have a signature gathering workshop, and also we're just going to talk about this issue a couple times. One thing that you should absolutely do is go to the labelgmo.org website, where they have all the local signature gathering activists that you can take trainings from all over California. So you can see the Santa Cruz one or anywhere in California. You can just check in and get active with your local, what do you call them, Pam?
Signature gathering trainings, yeah.
Okay. And what are the leaders called?
Okay, folks.
Oh, just local leaders. I just want to do one more plug.
One more quick one, really.
Yeah, justlabelit.org is an important formal petition to the FDA to challenge...
Okay, folks, you're out of time. Thank you, Pam Larry. Thank you, Thomas Whitman. Thank you all for tuning in. Should we or should we not know about the GMOs in our food?
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.